Hey there, my name is Jani and I'm the host of What's On Your Mind. I interview guests about their weekly musings and Wikipedia rabbit holes, like toxic beauty standards, or the impact of redlining, or bees. Whatever it is, we'll process it together. We'll all learn a little something and take another step in creating our own stories, all while adding another laugh line to your face. Daniel Gallucci is the co-founder and chief innovation officer of Neurocene. He's also a trained functional neurologist, osteopath, exercise physiologist, and exercise scientist, with experience working in clinic with top athletes. In this episode, Daniel talks about this amazing app that they've developed. It's still in its early stages, but it's available for you to download and test out. If you have any interest or curiosity in the intersection of brain health, mental health, and physical health, then this app is for you. Hi, Daniel. What's on your mind?
Oh, Jani, I don't know. So many different things in the world of healthcare. It's funny. I look at it in two ways. So it's kind of a really loaded question that you've now just asked me. What's on my mind? Because I kind of am trying to look at it from a bit of a different perspective, which is like, how is my brain working?
Yeah.
And it is my brain that's actually generating my mind. So today, actually, I feel like I'm up. I've had some coffee, got a little olive oil in it. I've had some water. I feel like my mind is pumping pretty good right now because my brain's pumping pretty good.
I love that. I love that. That's the most like metaphysical answer I've ever gotten. I love it.
It's the only way, like my mind tries to go through these different levels of organization. So as soon as you're saying mind and I'm like, oh, it's interesting. Because this is something actually that we deal with. And it's actually kind of, it's great actually, because we have this sort of like diaspora of different people within this little group that we've got going right now. And there's constantly this internal dialogue that emerges in terms of like, hey, Dani, you're doing all this like brain stuff, but what about mind? And where does mind fit in this sort of equation here? And we'll sometimes even just battle it out. And it's amazing to hear sort of the different perspectives from people. And I think that was largely, you know, sort of why we began this whole project kind of to begin with.
I love that. Well, and then what is that difference or the connection between brain health and mental health?
You know, it's, again, a great question in terms of, I think, and this again could just be my sort of perspective and then the people that I'm forcing to adopt my perspective working in this
Isn't
company.
Isn't that how it all starts though?
Yeah, that's how it goes. It's like you're either on the ship or you're off the ship.
Yeah.
But you know, tying back into sort of coming from a very clinical background and one that kind of emerged very differently. So I didn't go straight into the world of neuroscience. I didn't go straight into the world of having to deal with anything with quote unquote behavior per se. But the way it kind of evolved for me was coming off a soccer playing career, then into the world of sports medicine, into the world of physiology and really high-end level sort of performance. You know, I've been lucky enough to go to the World Series, the Olympic Games, you know, the NHL playoffs, all these different sort of environments to help people perform. You know, over time, we started to see that really performance really at the highest level, everybody has, you know, for the most part, most people have the same sorts of physical tools. Mm. And then what was really separating them was that performance edge that people had, guys and girls had, either from a mental and an emotional sort of state. And that was really what was the oftentimes the separator at the highest level.
Wow.
And then really thinking that, you know, being lucky to work with some great sports psychologists and work with psychiatrists and other people, it was really truly amazing. But the thing that I found a bit troubling, to be totally honest with you, Jani, was that there was so much focus on the behavior and so little focus ever went to the underlying biology of, well, how is the biology of this person right now? And again, in a very simple way at the beginning. So if somebody was suffering from chronic pain and, you know, through an injury or something, and they were sleeping 3 hours a night, broken up 3 hours a night. And then they would see the sports psychologist and it was like, okay, well, we need you to sleep better. I need you to calm your mind. I need you. And it's like, yeah, well, but the problem here is that this person is really suffering from a chronic pain perspective. Mm-hmm. So how do we deal with the biology to put the mind in a better spot to be able to do what it needs to do to be successful? And, you know, in the world of neuroscience, and I would still say, you know, as I transitioned then into the world of clinical neuroscience, the last few years, number of years, I was lucky enough to work with a neuroimaging company. So then we could do the most high resolution, basically brain imaging on the planet. And it came back to that exact, I literally still get goosebumps because we were putting some of these people in the scanner and it's like, damn it. Like, unless we could actually get to that underlying wow. correction of the biology of the brain, it's like, I could tell this person to meditate all day long. I can tell this. And again, in some cases that will work and that's great. But if there's no blood flow going up to those vessels that are then being controlled by certain areas of the brain, because it's just in like this crazy spasm, it's like, this person is not going to be successful in terms of whatever it is that we want them to do. So I think it really came down to trying to get a little bit more of a biological understanding for one of even just what's happening right now. Because again, because we've focused so much on this sort of like behavioral side, and it's fine, but without the appreciation for the biology being able to create that, and we can go through hundreds of different examples,
yeah,
that it was really creating almost this chiasm in terms of what was happening biologically with people. And then sort of the behavioral side of just trying to quote unquote fix it on the other end.
Absolutely. So to what extent is this a similar, I guess, pathway or perspective to medication assisting someone's kind of brain biology to help with to mental health? Is this at all in a similar kind of vein to that?
You know, it's a wonderful question. And on some levels, I would say yes, in terms of, you know, you could do certain things to say, okay, well, a physician is going to administer somebody some SSRI, serotonin, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. It's going to leave serotonin in the area so that the receptor can then grab it. And all of a sudden it's led to an improvement in behavior. You know, the reality of it is that's okay. And in some cases it works. I think it's, you know, less than 30% of cases, but in a small percentage of cases that will work, because then within that particular person that may be suffering, maybe it is solely a problem where it's like they do not have enough serotonin. Mm. You've increased a little bit of serotonin, and that's something that's going to be helpful for them. So by no means am I against that approach. It's 100% necessary. And in many, many cases, and I can tell you thousands of cases, that is the best option for certain people. But when you kind of look at it at scale,
yeah,
you know, this is where the problem really arises, is that we've had 500 or so years of looking at science in a very sort of linear reductionist way. So, okay, well, this person's suffering from this disorder, it means that it's because serotonin is down. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to increase serotonin and then we're going to go ahead and fix it. So it's very much a what you would call sort of an outside in or a top-down perspective of saying, okay, when we get down to this little level here and I correct that one level, then what emerges is improvement in behavior and physiology. And for some things that works, you know, but the reality of it is, I think what we've learned, you know, especially over the last 50 or 60 years, so understanding this is still relatively new,
yeah,
is that human biology is so chaotic. It is so dynamic. There are so many different things happening, not only at different levels of organization. So it's like, oh, if I took the outside of a cell and I said, oh, okay, there's this little serotonin receptor here. And now this little piece of serotonin, this little molecule from this medication has gone there and attached itself and is now communicating with the cell. There's so many other levels of organization that we just haven't even really figured out what's happening here yet. So the reality of it is, how do we look at these issues at many more levels of organization? How do we take a much more systems sort of integrated approach? How do we then factor in the simple fact that biology is chaotic, and really understanding that, you know, and this is sort of the issue, but also the opportunity for where things can go moving forward, is let's say even right now at this one moment, you know, they've studied me, they've done this randomized controlled trial, which is the, you know, the be all and end all,
yeah,
of scientific medicine. And they found this, oh, okay, this attaches to this molecule here. If I brought those same people that were in that study in 1 hour or 2 hours later, I may have a totally different result. I bring them in 2 days later, I may have a totally different result again. So there's this temporality that happens just through the nature of biology, because that's just the way biology exists, and we totally discount it. So we have these very crude sort of snapshots of a moment in time, and it's fine to take those snapshots, but we have to understand the context of what we're living is a full movie in 8K, can't just base it off of a snapshot, you know, every 30 days or every 60 days or every 90 days. So this is where we can dig further into the biology in being able to understand problems or issues at more levels of resolution, but then tie in data, tie in the ability to observe in natural time throughout life, that potentially provides an opportunity to really be able to get to what some of these concrete issues are in terms of dysfunction and stuff.
That is fascinating. And I love that analogy of a 4K movie. That absolutely makes sense. So yeah. Before we dive in and actually talk about the app, I'm really interested to know what it was like, that process of developing an app, because everything from what I've heard you talk about so far is, you know, when we think of neuroscience, we think of the imaging, we think of, you know, people working with clinicians. How did you even come up with the idea to translate those practices that are not in an app into an app where someone can just do something themselves, just, you know, with them and a phone?
You know, really, it was necessity more than anything in terms of, if I'm being totally honest with you, Jenny, I was, you know, failing in clinic more time. And I think anybody, if they're being honest, anybody working in the world of neurological rehabilitation and performance or things along those lines in the world of traumatic brain injury, concussion, stroke, tumor, when you're Parkinson's, early cognitive impairment, mild cognitive impairment, you start working in those worlds of rehabilitation and performance, and you're failing 90 some odd percent of the time. But what you're trying to do is observe and then be able to then make better judgments based on those observations. So I have science over here that gives me an idea. Okay, I understand how the basal ganglia works in terms of a Parkinson patient. I know that this person needs more dopamine. But what I have no real understanding of is, okay, this person shows up on Monday morning. I have no idea what's happened before that Monday morning. So when I bring them in clinic and I'm like, okay, how fast can you tap your finger on this thing here? And if it means they tapped it 20 times, maybe they don't change their medication. They tapped it 5 times, they change their medication. And then we don't see them again for a month or 2 months. It's like, I have no idea what any of that is based off of. So really, the reason that we started wanting to develop this to begin with was just to be able to deliver better clinical outcomes for people, which was like, hey, because again, the problem, and if you ask any of my patients or still patients now, because I don't even have a clinic now, but I'm still dealing with, you know, patients or users and things like that on a frequent basis. You know, imagine your homework. Imagine, unfortunately, okay, we won't say you. So we're going to say it's me. So we're going to reverse the knock on wood. I don't know if the mic picks it up there, but I'm knocking on wood. So I've gone down, which I have. I've gone down with, I'm an 18-year-old. I've gone down with a pretty serious concussion. And let's say I'm 20. So I don't even need my parents' consent now. I'm out on my own playing soccer. I've now badly been concussed. They're going to show up in clinic. They're going to do a few little things. Again, get a nice little snapshot of a moment in time. And then I'm going to try and implement some sort of rehabilitation. Somebody's going to implement a rehabilitation protocol for me or some sort of, what am I do next? And then I leave the clinic. And then I come in maybe a week later. Maybe I come in some clinical environments 30 days later, 60 days later, some 6 months later. And, you know, it's just such a broken system and it's so crude. And so we see why this hierarchy has been created, where it's like, well, this is all the evidence. This is what you need to do. And there's no real understanding of, well, how do we factor in just the very dynamic aspects of biology, like we were saying before? So, you know, the reality of it is, I then can't even trust that 18-year-old to come back and report to me.
That seems like a good point for a break. Time for some ads.
It's definitely no secret that I have struggled with body image and my relationship to food. I'll tell you, I've tried everything from yo-yo dieting to apps that weren't helpful to meeting with a bunch of different professionals. And I have to say, I think I finally have found the solution.
It is an app called Wavelength, and they combine personalized nutrition plans with powerful mindset and mental health tools. Wavelength is a holistic, compassionate, science-forward approach for anyone struggling with eating choices. My favorite section of the app are the 8 minutes a day audio courses and the over 20 mindset practices. This has been tremendous in my mental health journey and improving my relationship to food and helping me take one step closer to loving my body again. If you would like to join me on this journey and also support the podcast along the way, visit wavelength.live/mind to access your secret code, which will give you a 50% off discount for the app. So please check out this app and follow that link to find your code to get 50% off. Wavelength is the app to take back your power over food. And now back to the show.
So often what I'm doing is sending text messages to athletes and players. Hey, how you feel today? Hey, how much did you sleep? But again, the actual nature of being in that situation is going to by default like distort the data in some way. So how much can I trust that data? If we look at behavioral disorders, how much can you trust just being able to ask somebody a questionnaire as to how well they feel today? I need to be able to look at other things. I need to look at, okay, can we access the information in terms of how you're moving? Can we access information to how you're sleeping? Can we access information to how many times you're picking up this phone, you know, 300 times throughout the evening or at nighttime when you're supposed to be asleep? Like, these are bits of information that can often be a lot more telling than the actual biasness of self-reporting on one side that comes from the user. I think even more so, if you look, there's an amazing book. I don't know if you've read it. Danny Kahneman's Noise. Daniel Kahneman, the Nobel Prize behavioral economist. And Thinking Fast and Slow was an amazing book. But his new book, Noise, was just phenomenal when I had read it because I looked at myself as the clinician. And this aspect of noise. So we all know these biases exist. So it's like, oh, I like a certain type of food. I like a certain type of exercise. I am a practitioner of a certain type of medicine. And so these are all biases, but we particularly know that these biases for the most part exist. The amazing thing that Danny Kahneman and some of these other people have been looking at is this what they would call noise. So it's unintentional sort of bias, or it's an unintentional sort of like weighing certain situations in a certain way. So this example would be, hey, listen, I'm a football and I'm a European football fan. So I'm a huge fan of Liverpool Football Club. So I am the doctor and I am watching a Liverpool match on a Sunday and Liverpool gets spanked. So Liverpool ends up being beat. And then me as the practitioner is like, oh, okay, well, that's too bad. I invest a lot of my love into Liverpool, but I'm going to show up in clinic Monday morning and I'm just going to not even have that in my mind. And the reality of it is these things actually do influence behavior. So again, it goes back to that. We need to have a little bit better understanding of the underlying biology. We need to understand that there's noise coming from the medical community and there's bias there too. There's often noise and bias coming from the user. So how do we strip through that is data. How do we get through that is when we try and take away the ambiguity of it, how do we pick up the stuff that's just actually real? The problem with data is that now there's a ton of it. There's just a ton of it. And it's like, wow, now you have my sleep data. Now you have my movement data. Maybe we've added nutrition data. Maybe we've added genetics data. Maybe we've taken some blood tests now. And it's like, oh my God, now it's almost like too much. And I can tell you being, again, in clinic and lucky, because this is where I think some of the stuff in the world of professional sport and performance is great, is now you've got too much of it. Everybody comes in and has, I have my Whoop, I have my Aura, I have my 23andMe, I have my Bedit, I have my 8Sleep, I have my, you know, and it's like, whoa. So then what happened was, which we've now done, we've acquired this company called Netramark, which is basically a machine learning company that can take all that high level, very messy, very ugly data and synthesize it for me. So if it's like, okay, these are the things that I'm kind of looking at because 99% of it's going to be useless. What's that 1% that's going to be super valuable to me that's going to be super valuable to you, the user? And then what do we do with that to turn that back into strategies? How do we make it practical? How do we just turn that back into, you know, it's like, oh, I can tell Jenny that she needs to sleep 9 hours a night because that's what her thing says. But now she's working a job where she doesn't finish until 2 a.m. There's often been so much incompatibility with the data that comes in. And then this is where we're really trying to factor that into the equation in a very sort of specific and as personalized a way as we possibly can.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, so let's dive into the actual app now. And I know that you just listed off, you know, a bunch of apps. Like you said, there's so many apps out there that measure every single type of data. I mean, I have an app on my phone that's for my gut data now. I mean, there's
okay,
literally,
yeah
there's mm-hmm. everything in the world. So let's say that I'm a user of this app. Is this app that's something that would work in conjunction with all these other apps? Or is it more of like a one-stop shop where I can do everything just within this app and then download that data, you know, and share it with the clinician?
It's a great question. I think where we're at right now is we're in the process of building in the ability to be able to say, okay, where Neuro needs to become is right now it's an app. Again, we had to, you know, launch a sort of like what I would call a baby version of the app. So it's very much just gives an idea of this is our methodology. These are some basic tools based on a few questions. Here's some basic tools that we figure from our biological perspective can be helpful for anybody at scale. Mm. Which I still think is valuable. The real value, because for me, data is an optimization technique more than anything. The real value is going to be, yes, in hopefully by early February when it's fully built out, when we have the ability to say, okay, we could bring in now not only HealthKit, I think it's starting just with like HealthKit data and your Google Analytics data, but it's like, okay, we can start to bring that in over the next few months. That's basically the goal, is that we become almost this nexus of saying,
wow,
almost again, what I had to try and do in clinic, which was like, it's nice, but now how do you as the user, you know, figure out, okay, well, I've got my Whoop data over here, but how do I sync that with my GI data now that from my gut health? And now how do I, okay, but now here's my movement data from Apple and maybe now, but I also want to ride my Peloton. It's like, how do I figure out how to best do that? So exactly, that's basically where we're going to try and kind of be the nexus of like, dump it in here. And again, I understand we're totally new. So I expect zero people. And I would hope this is the case. I hope nobody trusts us at the beginning. I hope it's like, who are you? It's maybe a nice idea. There's a lot of nice ideas out there. But I think even right now, with the very little data, which is basically just a few questions, the very little data that we take in, and when we say, okay, well, just try this, or look at doing this, I think even in that very bare minimum, it's like somebody just calling me on the phone without even coming into clinic and doing all this crazy stuff. If we can take again, because it's just so lacking, if we just give people a few of the tools from a more biological aspect of how to improve their own health, including their brain health, which then by default includes their mental health.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can actually, this is actually pretty good. Like I see a bit of value. And so I feel like it's our job to be able to deliver value in a very small sort of like, oh, we don't really need much and we can still deliver some value. But now if we do have access to movement data, or if we do now have access to sleep data, then we can really deliver. We can really say, oh, okay, Jenny, well, you know what? Because you've got all these inflammatory issues here and other things, not only is it good enough to say, oh, you need to sleep 8 hours, but I'm going to really prioritize that you need to sleep between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. because that's predominantly when slow phase sleep is at a predominance in slow wave sleep. Is really what's going to be important from a restoring and these little janitors in your brain that are cleaning these residues. So being able to remove inflammation. But with that said, that means then we also need some dietary changes. With that said, that also means we need to be able to disconnect from that phone. So you're not going to bed with all this like sensory stimulation. That may mean we also need to throw in a couple breathing drills throughout the day just to rebalance out your central nervous system. We may actually get you to do some eye movements to fire up certain parts of your brain so you can be ready to go in the morning. It's like, how do you layer in? And again, if you speak to, you know, we just announced one of these Philadelphia Flyer hockey players that has been a patient and friend of mine now for a few years, but has been doing this for a long time. And it's like, it just becomes normal. Like it just becomes, okay, these are my drills. Just like he would go into the rink and warm up every day and do his stuff on the ice. It's like, okay, how are my eyes moving? How's my balance system working? How have I trained my gut in the off season to be able to handle what I'm going to need to be able to consume just to keep my body weight up through the entirety of the season? So these are all things that are super dynamic and they're super specific from one person to the next.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I just read this paper on gut health. It's like, yeah, it's nice, but you have trillions of cells in there and everything from when you were born, where you were born, you know, like these are all things that really factor into the equation. So really trying to understand these things on as personal level as possible is where we think sort of the next phase of medicine needs to go.
I love that. Well, you know what I really love and appreciate about your story is that it is truly a story of innovation. I mean, you talked about kind of failing in the beginning, but it's failing forward. That's exactly still what failing. Innovation still is.
Failing, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Still failing. But well, like you said, you know, this is a, you know, it's a product that's out there. It's, you know, it's only going to get better. It's only going to expand. Yeah. And so in terms of a user now, is it very user specific? Like only certain people can get it, or could somebody that's listening to the show go
anybody
on, you know, to the Apple store?
Neuro, N-U-R-O, you can go on, you can look at it, you can play around with it. You'll get an idea with some of the drills. Yeah, you'll see this little, we don't do the best job explaining it, but we're going to change that. You'll see even things like there's this little dot drill where it's like, okay, there's this dot that's going to be moving across the screen. And we'll just say, okay, Jenny, I need you to tell me in seconds, how long is this dot traveling across the screen? And you'll be like, I don't know, it's 9 seconds, it's 15 seconds, it's 15.21 seconds. But even things like your subjective sense of time, which again, you're going to answer something different from me versus somebody else versus you Monday versus you Wednesday could even. And it's like, we know that things like your subjective sense of time can be tied to physical health issues, mental health issues, how we're aging sorts of issues. So even little things like that, that again, not making any diagnoses based on any of these things right now, but we're really trying to say, when we get a better understanding of the underlying biology for you, when we get an understanding of what these things are for you, then it's actually we're able at some point to be able to turn around things in a way that can be specific for you as well. And stress is another one. Like if you had to boil it down, you know, and again, we started this project pre-COVID, and then COVID has just been crazy. But I tell people, and we do this in clinic all the time, it's like, you know, nobody needs another paper on stress or cortisol and glucocorticoids and things. There's so much of that research out there. What people are tremendously struggling with, it's like the ability to understand what is stress for you. And again, what that is on an individual level. So being able to monitor that and say, well, okay, well, biological stress is one thing. Psychological stress is another thing. Sociological stress is another thing. And these things are totally dynamic and they change through time. And how do we correlate that with things like movement? How do we correlate that with other sorts of metrics that we can really say, okay, well, what we need to do is understand that no stress is no good, because then it doesn't create the learning and sort of adaptation that we need. So on the flip side, too much stress, which is the problem, because it's like, regardless what anybody says, when you just get very biological with it, the human brain has evolved in a way that's totally incompatible with much of how we live right now. Again, it's just, but we're in this situation. So how do we deal with the practicality? Okay, well, that's great. Now, what do we do about it? So really understanding that nuance on an individual level is also really key to be able to say, okay, how do I keep people in that middle space of, okay, this is the zone where there's enough stress to create all the good stuff, but it doesn't push them into the chronic stress, which leads to disease, dysfunction, and all that other stuff along the way.
Wow. This is just fascinating. I'm so excited to kind of help you put this out into the world. So for anyone out there, I know you talked about the app name, but if people want to either download the app or learn more about the app or you, where can they go?
They would go to the app stores, Neuro, N-U-R-O. We have a website out there right now, Neuroscene, N-U-R-O-S-E-N-E.com. Again, it's a work in progress, but I'm super excited because I think, yeah, if we can really base the future of what healthcare needs to be on a little bit more of this integrated biology aspect tied into really then the data that's needed to be able to make that happen, I really think we can do amazing things for being able to empower people in their own, being able to put them at the center of their own healthcare journey moving forward.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing the app and getting one step closer to, you know, having a futuristic product for all of us to use. I think this sounds fantastic.
Man, cool.
And yeah, and like you said, I mean, it's empowering us back with knowledge to make us in charge of our own health. I mean, that's ultimately what it is. So thank you 100%. So much.
Thank you. It was so great. It's one thing to be doing all this science-y and other stuff on the back end. But thank you, because it's folks like you that have to get that message out there. So I'm putting a little responsibility on you, no pressure, but you know, like, but you know, I appreciate it because again, unless you can tell the story and have it resonate with people, then it doesn't really work otherwise. It doesn't operate in silos. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you for supporting the podcast. Subscribe wherever podcasts are found. And of course, rate, review, and share with a friend. If you want to learn more about me, you can check out my website, janirad.com. That's janirad.com. Head on over to janirad.com/podcast and click on support the show. Check out my Instagram at janirad.me. Love the podcast music? That's BK Williams. You can follow him on Instagram, BrianK_Williams28. Thanks for listening.